Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, here with Vincent Neil Emerson, stud songwriter, country music artist out of Texas. I've been really, really into your music lately, playing it nonstop. And I just mentioned before we hit record, I poured a glass of wine. Usually I'm drinking beer on this podcast. Something about your music today, though, I was like, you know, I'm going to have a glass of wine. I don't know what it was about it, but I was just like really digging it. Some of the songs aren't, they're heavy. They're not upbeat. The subject matter is as serious as it gets in some of these. But for the fans that maybe haven't heard your music as much, what was kind of your start, background, kind of how you got into music?
I started playing music for a living, when I was about 19 years old. I think I picked up music, when I was 17, picked up the guitar around then and started trying to write, but I didn't really start writing until I was about 19.
Who are some of your musical heroes that kind of pushed you into songwriting?
The first time I heard Townes Van Zandt, I knew I really wanted to take songwriting seriously. I think I saw that movie Leaves of Grass starring Edward Norton. I think he plays himself twice, plays twins. But there's a scene where he's singing Rex's Blues, and I never heard it before, and I decided that that was my favorite song in the entire world, and it still is. But yeah, Towns really changed the way that I saw everything, you know.
And you have a new album coming out on the 25th, self-titled. You released some songs here leading up, and is it tomorrow High on Getting By is coming out?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So the new album with Ronnie Krall produced it. How did that kind of come about?
I was writing these songs and they got sent to Rodney, and Rodney gave me a call and said that he'd like to produce a record. So just as simple as that. I wish there was a crazier story to tell, but
you didn't run into him in a bar.
Ronnie Krall produced my record, but yeah, it was, it felt right. So, you know,
yeah, I'm really, he's had some high praise for you, likened you to John Prine, said you were cut from the same cloth as guys like Guy Clark and, your aforementioned hero, Townes Van Zandt. Like, what does that mean to you coming from a guy like Rodney?
It means the world to me, man. I don't necessarily, I don't know if I can live up to that, but I'll take it coming from Rodney Crowell. It's really nice of him to say that. And I think, you know, his whole thing is like, you know, as long as you're trying, you're swinging for the high bar, you know, I've always, I've written songs, honky tonk songs, and things to suit my environment that I was in at the time, which was playing 3-hour honky tonk and barbecue places. Mm-hmm. And I never really got a chance to. It's hard to sing a song like Learning to Drown in front of like a honky tonk crowd. I'd imagine this. I haven't tried yet, but
yeah.
So with the songwriting thing, the singer, the Texas singer songwriter thing is something I've always, it's been my main, main squeeze, musically.
The Learn to Drown is as deep of a song, as heavy subject matter as it can get. You wrote it after your father's suicide. Can you talk a little bit about the process of that song and how it kind of came about? I think I read a quote from you. You were saying, you felt kind of pulled in to kind of try to write something about it. And this is the song that came of it. And Wes and I were talking before. We're like, wow, this is, you don't hear country songs like this very often anymore. And just props to you on the song and the honesty and the openness and the transparency and kind of the subject matter. But that must've been a real tough one to write for you.
Yeah, that song in particular, it was real hard to write. And, you know, I'd written several songs before about my father's passing, and I tried to do the story justice. I tried to write something that was meaningful, and I was having a real hard time because it's really hard. It's hard to tap into those emotions and write about that kind of stuff. So when I finally stopped trying so hard, that's when I wrote, you know, I was able to write Learning to Drown. And it's not necessarily, sorry, I got a plane passing.
I was asking, I was like, you're sitting in your car, right?
Yeah, I'm in my van right now.
Is that Vania Tucker? I think I saw a picture. You guys called your van Vania Tucker?
And I traveled with her to Colorado recently. That's her van. Oh, this is Old Blue.
Oh.
During, okay. But you know, that song isn't necessarily about my father's passing, but it does mention it, and it does deal with some of those feelings, and I think that's what I needed to do, you know. Mm. And it's just, you know, the opening line is, I've been sleeping in my car. I was homeless when I was 19, and I did sleep in my car for about half a year. So, you know, just trying to put all those hard times into a song and deal with, try to tackle the idea of depression and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like a cathartic exercise, like a therapy in a sense, to kind of, you know, spill out those words onto a page. Is that kind of how that feels for you?
I've always said, and I've heard many songwriters say this, that songwriting is the best form of therapy that there is, you know, at least for a songwriter. Anybody can write songs, though. So, you know, I really think so.
But the unfortunate reality is a lot of people write bad songs, too, and you're not one of those guys.
So well, about music is it's subjective. So what might be a real good song at all might be, somebody might hate it. Somebody might not like one of my tunes, but I think the important thing to take away from it is the important thing to worry about when it comes to songwriting is trying to be as honest as possible. Mm. Write about what you know and know it well before you write about it. But, honesty is, I think that's the key to connecting with whoever's listening to your song, you know?
Yeah. I totally agree. And I kind of poking fun at it in that sense of the writing side of things. Cause I have this pet peeve in mainstream country of, guys who it's guys that are very open about, say they don't drink, and then they write party songs about drinking. So sometimes for me, as I gotten older, I kind of connect more with songwriting when it's like coming from a real place. It's coming from an honest place, authenticity and all that stuff. I don't know why that became a pet peeve of mine over the last couple of years, but it did. Just like, I'm like, come on, you're not doing it. Don't like, but do you pull from within, like, does something like that annoy you or no? If I don't, you don't strike me as a guy that's, I'm wearing this Play Country on Country Radio shirt. You don't strike me as a guy that's turning on your regular country station and listening to kind of what's going out there in the mainstream, the CMT Awards last night, but do you pay attention or no?
No, that's a whole completely different world as far as I'm concerned. You know, yeah. That's a different type of music. I think yeah. I went to a barbecue joint yesterday. We were doing some branding all day and we stopped to break for lunch and walked into a barbecue place and they were playing like some whatever pop station. And I go to the counter. I was like, hey, do y'all mind putting on a different channel, a different station? And they're like, yeah, we can do that, but it's got to be country. I was like,
what the hell is this?
Playing right now is not a country. So, I mean, I'm really lucky. I'm really lucky in the way that I don't, because not everybody in the can you hear me?
Yeah, you're
good. Yeah, we got you.
Not everybody in the music business can isolate themselves from those things. And some people have to be around that stuff and forms of music that they don't like. But I kind of I'm in my own world and I listen to what I want to listen to, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way.
I love that you walked in and were like, can you change the music? Like, do you do that a lot?
No, not very often, but it was loud, and you know.
I wish I knew what song was playing when you asked that. I'm trying to think of what.
I couldn't tell you.
Fuck if I know.
the few guys' names that I do know is only because I heard someone talking shit about them. You know,
that's yeah. Like, are you?
So you follow us on Twitter?
I'm not on. I have a Twitter, but I don't get on it very often.
Yeah, well, Kane Brown blocked us on Twitter, so you're not missing much over there.
I'm not real sure who that is, but okay.
Oh, well, I mean, that's amazing if that's the case.
Good on you, brother. Good on you.
Well, I was gonna ask, because it is funny sometimes. We had a lot. I mean, we talked about this a lot, so I'm not gonna beat a dead horse, but the Texas style of country for me, especially like as I gotten a little older. And been doing this a little longer, I just started gravitating towards it so much more. Huge fan, like whether it's Whiskey Myers or some on the more rock side, or it becomes somebody like you, that's more like the songwriter style, like some honky tonk type of music, sad stuff. I always just gravitate towards Texas now. So I was going to ask you, but now I already know the answer. I was like, so you don't know anything in the mainstream, but is there something within Texas currently that you like, or do you kind of go back, listen to music from kind of the past more, or are there some guys and gals in Texas right now that you're into?
Oh yeah. There's plenty of people in Texas that I like. Anytime I'm asked who's your favorite new artist, I always draw a blank. Myself,
Summer
Dean is really great, man. She's about as Texas as it gets. And she's awesome. One of my favorite bands is a band called 1100 Springs. Hmm. And they're from the DFW area. They've been playing for a long time. And Willie Nelson's putting out he's not putting out a new he put out a new record, didn't he?
That guy ain't so bad, right?
Yeah, Willie, he's still playing.
He just did a Frank Sinatra cover album.
Yeah, and I think he's got another one on the way, and he's got tour dates that have just announced. So you know, and then there's Sleep at the Wheel, you know, I like them a whole lot. And there's a bunch of new artists that I can't remember right now, but you know, it's still here, man. There's still really good music.
Is Coulter Wall an honorary Texan now? I feel like he's been ranching and shit. He's hanging out with you, cutting songs together.
Well, tell Vincent the culture, like the Joe Rogan thing. That's a good tidbit too. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Joe Rogan, but he's pretty much got the biggest podcast in the world. UFC guy, host of Fear Factor. But he wanted to have Coulter on his podcast, and Coulter was like, "I'm ranching this summer, but maybe in the fall, like maybe we could do it afterwards."
And most people would kill their mother to be on that podcast because it's like what it does for your career or whatever you're trying to do. So that, I think I always love Coulter, but that reading that story, I said, man, this guy is legit as fuck. Like, this guy does not.
What's your experience like working with Coulter? Cause you guys cut Roadrunner together and he's a label mate.
Yeah. He's a good friend, man. He's a really good guy. He's taken me on tour and helped me build a career.
Have you been up to Canada with him at all?
Yeah, we played British Columbia one time. Played BC. I think we played Vancouver. British Columbia.
Are people as nice as everybody says up there?
Well, I think BC is more like a big city, but people were nice, yeah. No. Coulter's from he's actually from like farming and ranching community in Saskatchewan. So the whole I don't think it's too much of a transition for him to come down to Texas other than the hot weather.
Yeah. You talk about playing barbecue spots and grinding it out on the road and going to Colorado. That's actually where I'm at right now. And
ooh,
yeah. I mean, if you come back here, let us know. But how hard was it now that we're kind of getting past the COVID, you know, not being able to tour, places are finally like live music's back in a lot of different places other than just Texas or Florida. Was that a brutal kind of, cause you're kind of hitting that trajectory where you got a big buzz going about you and then boom, you can't go out there and play shows for fans. Was that a pretty brutal kind of situation to kind of get thrown into? I know the answer is yes, because everybody says it, but for you in particular, kind of how did you handle it?
Well, I just tried to keep my head above water and I started writing a whole lot, and I was grateful for the time off to write, you know, try to find there's not many upsides to this whole situation, but, and a lot of people, I'm sure, felt the same way. But yeah, man, I just tried to work as much as I could, and we did the whole live stream thing. I did that as many times, and we kind of exhausted that. I think a lot of musicians can relate to that. But yeah, man, some really bad things happened. Some things fell apart, but then other things came together in a really amazing way. Getting to record a record with Rodney, playing Willie's 4th of July picnic, you know, and just kind of and just making stuff happen whenever things shouldn't be happening, you know.
Yeah.
Is Willie doing that this year, the 4th of July picnic, or is that still a go?
Last one was during quarantine, and it was a live stream event.
Oh, yeah.
I got to go play in the chapel at Luck on his ranch. I'm sure they'll do something similar if they don't do like a full blown festival, you know.
Have you met him? I assume you spent some time with him, or has it been short kind of interactions with Willie?
He wasn't around for the picnic. Mm. It was all dream. All the artists were isolated, but I heard he was listening in, was watching somewhere. I got shortly before that, I think it was his last 4th of July picnic, or maybe it was the end of the Outlaw tour he was doing. I got to go hang side stage and watch Willie play. Coulter invited me back there. And that was a pretty damn amazing experience. For Texans, meeting Willie Nelson is kind of like meeting Jesus, you know. It's like,
I was just about to say that. You were like, he wasn't there, but he was watching over. I'm like Jesus.
Yeah. No, he seems like one of those guys. Just seems like one of those guys, like mythical. He's not mythical. Like these legends that are so legendary that are still around, still doing it. They have that aura. It seems, you know, about them, and just the fandom with Dolly Parton is kind of like that now these days too. And it's just, yeah. And
Matthew McConaughey, that's the Holy Trinity right there. Willie McConaughey and Straight.
Yeah. Was Willie on the McConaughey thing? No, right? The recent thing? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No, he wasn't.
That would have been great. Cause there was that famous Matthew McConaughey photo of him side stage for Willie Nelson with the armadillo on his leg. I mean, that's like, does a photo get more Texas? Do you like McConaughey? I shouldn't get too far into it before I.
I love Matthew McConaughey. I mean, I don't know any Texan that doesn't.
He just liked our tweet, so we're pretty jazzed up over here.
He's like a nice guy.
Yeah, I mean, he might run for governor.
Would you vote for him?
Oh, hell yeah. In a heartbeat, I would, for sure.
We had like to move to Texas just so I can vote for him.
Woody Harrelson would run for president, man.
Yeah, whatever the second in command. I mean, come on. That guy is the Lincoln commercials, the shows, the rom-coms are even good. I liked him at the rom-com stage. And then now he's just like this Texan guy walking around, like putting on these benefits and helping the people. It's good stuff, man. I mean, that's what you kind of want to see. And he kind of is trying to pull people from both sides kind of to the middle, which I think is a great approach for if you're going to do something, if you are going to do something in politics. Very, very few people talk that way. You know, we'll see what happens. I mean, in Texas itself, for people that have never been there, I mean, I've only been there a handful of times, but obviously a massive state, but it's so different regionally, city to city. When you're touring, you're going to all these different places. They all have their character. They all have their kind of like their DNA. Do you have some favorite spots in Texas that no matter what's going on, you're like, I want to go there, or I love that spot, or I love that city, or I love that town, or do you kind of have a few of those spots?
Man, it's hard to pick, but I think my favorite part of Texas is, it's got to be the Hill Country. I love the Hill Country, you know, just outside of Austin. I love Austin, Texas so much. And I'm from East Texas, so I love East Texas as well. I mean, I love this entire state. There's just something beautiful about everywhere you go. And you'll hear a lot of Texans talk shit about like different cities.
Oh yeah.
This or whatever. But I mean, I think there's something great everywhere you go. You know?
It's one of those few states. There's only a handful of states that have a bunch of popular cities within them. I think actually Colorado, I'm lucky to be in one that kind of has a similar thing. California is one, Texas, like in Chicago, it's like, or yeah, like West is in Chicago, in Illinois, it's like, you got Chicago. And it's like, you're not really got, that's it. You know, there's not these
there's no different Illinois pride either. Like no one cares if they're from Illinois.
Right. And in Colorado, one thing I realized that somebody had to tell me something, I was like, what are these license plates that say native? Cause people got so annoyed with all the people moving here. Like I'm one of them, but people move here. They like people have like a bat, like it's like a badge of honor. Like, hey, no, I'm born here. I'm from here. So these states or Texas or Austin specifically, everybody's moving there. Colorado's another place. Everybody's leaving California, coming to Texas. Are you noticing it? Are you the talk or the change in some of the cities and the infrastructure?
I think there's something to be said about taking pride in your community and where you're from and your city. In a positive way, but I think once you start getting to that territory where you're like, well, I'm from here, or not, so you know,
right,
whatever, man. I think that's pretty unhealthy. I think everyone should be welcome, and if you want to be in the move to Texas, man, you know, it's okay, you know, it ain't no big deal to me. I know some people feel differently, but
plenty of space,
yeah. I think everyone, you know, because our ancestors were not from here, you know. Some of mine were, but I mean, as white people living in America, like, we're all immigrants anyway. So, you know, it is what it is. You just got to love everybody and accept everybody.
Well said.
You mentioned cutting your teeth in some barbecue joints. What's the best barbecue joint in Texas? Or some of the best?
Well, Franklin's is always up there, right?
I can't say because there's too many good ones, and I don't want to piss anybody off.
What are some of your must goes then? Like, if you're in this town, where should you go?
As far as barbecue goes,
yeah,
Black's barbecue is really good.
Mm-hmm.
In Fort Worth, there's a really good barbecue spot called Heim. Heim barbecue is really, really good. And, you know, I mean, there's so many. I can't even think of them all. But
what's your go to? For me, I like burnt ends, mac and cheese, like the brisket type of stuff. But I love pig too, and I know Texas isn't as big on the pig as like Carolinas are. But what's your kind of go to order if you're gonna get barbecue?
Either the brisket or the burnt ends, man, for sure. Yeah,
nice. Yeah, I mean, I could just live off of that shit. Like, right? Just carnivore diet, a little coleslaw, a little mac and cheese, depending on what I'm eating, and
get baked some beans, collard maybe. Greens or something to get the vegetables in.
Salad, man. Mustard salad.
Oh yeah, that sounds good. Man, I'm hungry now. I'm hungry, and then I had a glass of wine, so then it's just like hit me, and I'm like extra hungry. Do you go to Nashville ever or no?
Yeah, I come through every once in a while. I've got a bunch of buddies that live over there, so anytime I can come through, I do. I love Nashville.
So you're 29, right? Are you 29? Yeah. So when was the first time you went to Nashville? Because you're a similar age to us, and we saw the change kind of when we went to Nashville for the first time, just before Whiskey Riff, as just kind of like, hey, let's go have a good time and check it out. We were back in college. Yeah. So it was kind of like maybe like a 10-year, call it 10 years ago, probably was right. 10 years or so.
Yeah.
But seeing the change from then to now, just with the building, the neighborhoods, the change and everything. Have you kind of noticed that as well? When you've been there?
Yeah, I've got some buddies who are Nashville natives, and the way they feel about it is, you know, when they lost that bowling alley over there, and then they're, you know, I think what was that place down there, the Exit Inn?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
They're I think if they haven't lost that, they're on the verge of losing it. And then, you know, that's happening in Austin, and I've noticed that more than anything else as far as cities changing, really, because I spent more time in Austin than I have in Nashville. But man, that's a shame. It's a shame that things are changing, and it sounds like they're not changing for the best. They might be changing for the worst, but there's still a really great community of people there, and they're not leaving. So that's good, at least.
Yeah,
absolutely. You're kind of like a road warrior. Have you, what's kind of like, have you ever had a show where you've had too much to drink or something like that, and things just kind of went off the rails?
Yeah. We saw a picture of you drinking a Shiner Bock, and we were kind of talking, I was like, it's always a funny answer that we get from artists.
Most artists who've played a number of shows have had some kind of story where, oh, maybe I had a little too much, or a drunk fan, or just kind of anything. What's your wildest like live experience
or biggest flop, if you've ever had one of those? I don't know if you have, but
I don't think I've had any big flops. Yeah.
That's good.
That's great.
But you know, too much to drink, there's been plenty of those shows.
yeah. We don't consider that a flop. Great.
Too much fun. Thing, but I remember one memorable show we had was playing in Oklahoma with Turnpike Troubadours. And we were playing a casino up there. I think it was Buffalo Run, and the electricity went out in the middle, like into our set. And this giant crowd of people just went black, you know, and the PA shut off, and my drummer's still drumming, but the stuff, like, I think we had lost power right before the chorus, and I was like, damn, dude. And it was off for about a couple minutes, and then it came back on, and we jumped into the chorus, and the whole crowd went crazy, man. Like, they just, it was perfect timing. But Turnpike wasn't so lucky that night. We finished out, and then they got about three or four songs into their set, and electricity went out, but this time it went out for about 2 hours.
Oh man.
I mean, I assume you're one of the guys, like all the fans out there, fingers crossed that they get back together and started doing music again. It seems like some of the news, it seems like it's inching closer to that happening.
Yeah, let's hope. man, because they make really great music.
Yeah, I mean,
they're one of the best bands to come out of the U.S. in a long time, man. They're really great.
What's it like opening up for them?
It was fun. Some of the biggest shows I've done so far. And they're all really nice guys, too. So, it was a really good experience to tour around with them a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead, Wes.
I was going to say, we actually premiered RC's solo project's first single today. RC and the Ambers, I'm sure you're familiar with them, but they're going to be dropping an album soon. And Kyle Nix had a solo album. So it's kind of cool to see, like, you know, they're such a talented group of dudes that they're kind of like still putting out music together, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
that's Kyle. Texas.
Yeah. Me too, man.
Speaking of Texas, and Wes and I were joking about this kind of before you got on, because have you seen any UFOs?
UFOs?
Yeah.
I did see one the other night when I was back home in East Texas. I'm pretty sure.
Knew it.
There we go. We had a feeling.
All these like five lights going through the air.
Oh, don't cut out on us on the internet.
And they disappeared one after the other. Like, I don't know. Is there talk of UFOs in Texas right now or what?
Not really Texas specific, right, Wes? But
no, I just assume. I think that when aliens land, do you believe in aliens?
Yeah.
I think it's possible.
I think we all do. Okay,
I think great. When they land, I think they're just going to land in Texas first. I think that's just where
that's the place to go.
Place to go.
Hold on. These government videos, though, right? The ones that they kind of released, the Pentagon released, San Diego, right?
San Diego.
So yeah. It's like
there's a Navy base there. I don't give me that shit.
But it's like Texas. That's a nice place. That's a nice place. San Diego's not a bad spot to kind of check out. And then dip out real quick.
Yeah.
They're on the beach.
But then you drop into I heard there's this guy, Lex Fridman, who's like a MIT genius guy. He's been on Rogan's podcast. Wears a suit. Does a podcast. Really, really brilliant guy. But very high level intellectual type of podcast stuff he does. And he was talking with he had a lady on, and I can't remember what she did, but they were talking about aliens and I think, I don't know if he was high or what, or if the stuff he was saying was like, if I took a bunch of edibles, like the stuff I would think laying in the backyard, staring at the sky. But he was like, what if the trees are the alien? Like, what if trees are aliens? And we don't even know it. They're smarter than us. We can't even figure out that they're talking to each other and the trees are just talking and they're aliens. And I heard this shit after taking an edible and I'm just like, my brain just like liquefied out of my ears is what it felt like. So I don't know. Like, who knows how the aliens are going to get here? Who knows if they're looking at us right now and just saying like, screw this, we're going to wait till things kind of, people start being a little nicer to each other. But I don't know. Do you ever dabble in that? Like take an edible and kind of just like think like write on something like that. Who do we just have?
Performance enhancing.
Yeah. Well, we had John Randall, we were talking about with John Randall, with the Marfa tapes and Miranda Lambert and Jack Ingram, and they're drinking tequila like, at all times of the day. Maybe they were, I don't know if he said they smoked it. We asked him if he smoked peyote. They said no.
Yeah. No on the peyote. Yes on the tequila.
But do you have a, cause I know like Kip Moore is a guy and we're buddies with. I think he said he smokes cigarettes when he writes, just like a weird, do you have any superstitious go-tos when you're writing, whatever it might be?
Who, me?
Yeah, like yeah. If you're writing, do you have like a go-to thing that you do when you're writing?
I was smoking a lot of cigarettes at the time I wrote this last record. I was chain smoking, but I don't recommend that. It's not that it helped me write any better or anything. I was just addicted to cigarettes. But you know,
honest,
I like to be alone when I write. That's my thing. I can't be around people. I tried to write. I've written in hotel rooms before, and that's even hard just knowing that there might be somebody next door listening. But
oh, wow.
Like complete isolation when I write.
That's really interesting because go ahead, Wes.
Sorry. I was going to say, so you don't do any co-writes then? I mean, I imagine I could look at your track list and figure that out, but
no, I've tried before and it just, I think the kind of music that I want to write and the kind of music that I'm best at writing and really just able to write is really personal stuff these days. It's hard to write a personal song with someone else, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Well, I mean, even for me, like as a big Alan Jackson fan, and he released that new album recently that had, I mean, it seems like 100 songs on it. What is it, like 18 songs maybe, but
yeah, something like that.
But when you see Alan Jackson as a legend still releasing an album at his age today, and he wrote so many of those songs, I think, by himself, I love that. I love when I see that because you know it's coming from just like the source. It's coming from you. It's coming from the person that's lived it or thought it or experienced it. And I mean, you are a true like wordsmith, and I thought the stuff you've released up leading up to this album has been incredible.
Thank you.
I'm pumped for the album, and that comes out June 25th, self-titled, and we can't thank you enough for joining us. You're an incredible songwriter, and I hope a lot more people can kind of tap into this style of Texas country because it's so damn good. And it's stuff that you're not, speaking of my shirt earlier, you're not going to hear on the radio, but it doesn't matter. Like, you got to listen to it. So props to you, man.
Yep.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate y'all having me on and just being interested in what I'm doing. That means a lot to me.
Oh, we love it, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cheers, man.
Keep
be safe on the road.
I will.